Welcome to the All Out Coach Podcast. My name is Tim Michelishvili. I'm your host, also CEO and co-founder of Amedev Pharma, a performance analytics and organizational change agency for life sciences that uses a particular sports and data science formula to help medical professionals quantify and communicate their direct business and clinical impact on their organizations, on their healthcare community, and patients. This show has a long-term vision that is designed to encourage a metamorphosis in our critical thinking, in our personal and professional perspectives over time, because life requires different version of us across its different stages. So my special guest today, I think, personifies this metamorphosis, this transformation and agility. His name is Dr. Pierantonio Russo, and he is an extraordinary physician executive, cardiac and heart transplant surgeon with over 20 years of experience. He's also an expert in data analytics and medical informatics, health economics, reimbursement, as well as population medicine. He has a certificate in healthcare innovation from the University of Pennsylvania, as well as in digital medicine. He's also a professional member of the American Heart Association. He currently serves as the corporate chief medical officer at Eversana. He practiced medicine at Mayo Clinic, and in 2007, he began to hold leadership positions in academic, clinical, and administrative functions at institutions across the United States, such as Temple, St. Christopher's Hospital, Thomas Jefferson Medical College, and the University of Missouri. The roles such as chief of cardiac surgery, pediatric cardiac surgery, and heart transplantation. And he also was a fellow in heart transplantation at the Texas Heart Institute in Houston, Texas. After gaining his experience in these roles, he decided to apply his knowledge in impacting populations at large. And he began to work at healthcare plans. He's a medical director at Independence Blue Cross in Philadelphia, where he implemented predictive and prescriptive analytics in order to guide utilization of healthcare, also to optimize members' experience and patient remote monitoring, among others. He then went on to assume the role of vice president of health services at Harvard Pilgrim Health. In 2017, Dr. Pierantonio Russo received the Health Hero Award from the city of Boston. And he continues to teach for over 27 years at various medical academic schools, such as Temple Medical School, Thomas Jefferson Medical College, the Allegheny University, and the University of Missouri as well. So I am absolutely fortunate to have you as my guest, Pierantonio. We're going to hear from Dr. Russo about the power of data analytics in personalizing and improving healthcare quality within the reach for all of us. Welcome to the All Out Coach Podcast, Pierantonio.
Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you for inviting me.
I'd like to start by asking you about something that I'm curious. What are some of your most memorable experiences as a clinician, as a cardiac and heart transplant surgeon?
Yeah, so I would say that the most memorable experience has been operating on a child who was 3.5 days old, who needed a heart transplant, and giving lots of credits to my team at St. Christopher Hospital for Children and Temple University in Philadelphia. We were able to locate a suitable organ, and we transplanted this child who was born with a very advanced, severe congenital heart disease. We actually did the first operation when she was 1 day old, palliate that child condition in order to then gain some more time to find indeed an organ. We then found that organ, that heart, and from a donor, and we transplanted that child. Child is still alive and doing well. Now, of course, it is an adult, and helps others, including societies like the American Art Association, understanding the value of the research in cardiovascular disease in this country, and the contribution that the American Art Association and other cardiovascular societies in this country provide to the rest of the world.
And how did that experience as a cardiac surgeon spark your interest in the enthusiasm that I see you speaking about computation, machine learning, in order to advance medicine?
Well, cardiovascular disease is a discipline that has really made progress by using data, and particularly cardiovascular surgery has been using data with the Society of Thoracic Surgery database for a long time. In the 80s, we started to use the SDS database. SDS is Society of Thoracic Surgery. And only with data, one can make progress in understanding what works for certain patients, what doesn't work for certain patients. And I have to say that my colleagues in cardiovascular medicine and cardiothoracic surgery have been a pioneer in the utilization of data and analytics to support patient care. And to, again, to identify the correct operation, the correct treatment for the correct patient. Transplantation, of course, is one of the subspecialty within so cardiac surgery and thoracic surgery that also has benefited from understanding who should receive the very limited number of hearts or livers or kidneys, so limited amount of organs, and would benefit the most. So all of that requires understanding of epidemiology, statistics, and analytics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you have a truly a vast, diverse, and illustrious career in which you crossed the bridge between the impact of medicine on health economics as well, right? Which is a very complex topic for many of us to understand, including physicians, I think, and providers. Mm-hmm. Because of your work in, you know, Independence
Blue Cross and Harvard Pilgrim in Boston, to some of the top plans in the country.
Right. So I want to ask you a complex question of, you know, the medical decision making, because many of us wonder about why it is that physicians may have the best of intentions to deliver high quality of care, but they may be limited because of health plans, which is the kind of the impression of many in the public. And, you know, so how do health plans or payers with providers make better decisions together?
Well, I have a very, I have a very balanced view of the reimbursement system in this country. There is no question that we need to understand as physicians, as part of society, that there are limited resources, and the limited resources must be allocated appropriately through a value analysis that, of course, includes patients' value, clinical values, families in the case of children, as well as, of course, understanding that the being the resources limited, we need to utilize those resources correctly. And one of the best things that has happened in the practice of medicine over the years has been the introduction of the concept of evidence-based medicine. And obviously, we must have the best evidence. That evidence must be verified in order to then apply it in clinical practice. But the simple experience, the heuristic experience of the physician is not enough anymore, because in decision making, because we do have, if we really want to dig, plenty of evidence now to support the majority of the treatment plans for patients. Think of, for example, of precision medicine in oncology care. Right. So today we can identify the specific molecular target for certain cancers, and we do have treatment for those specific patients who have the specific mutation. And so that is the what we call target therapy. and we are getting closer and closer to precision medicine. In the treatment of chronic conditions, the data allow us with the appropriate analytics, looking at various sources of data, not just one source of data, but various sources of data and multiple iterations, allows you to then come up with the best treatment for the best patient. And identify the physicians and the locations where the patient would be served best. Is the patient be served best at home? We think of the hospital at home that we now have versus stay in the hospital for several days without moving, for example, at all from the bed. So the data allow us to have that particular approach that is specific for that physician, for the patient. And at the same time, the medical cost associated with a certain medical treatment or treatment pathway must be taken in account. And so the major health plan do have a very specialized approach to writing medical policies, which are based on evidence, and also on they take in account the comparative value of various treatment available for that particular patient with that particular condition. So I think that we need to do a better job at convincing our colleagues and the society in general that the health plans are not there to deny care. They are there to try to provide the best possible care for the right patient at the appropriate price.
Yeah, which is very quite complex, but it sounds like there is improvement in personalizing that experience.
I can tell you that, for example, when I was medical director at Independence Blue Cross, which is the third largest Blue plan in the country, we worked, and again, I always give credit to my team and my colleagues in data science. We mm-hmm. built a predictive models which allow us to identify with some degree of precision the patients who would benefit the most for certain intervention. Think of heart failure. We had more than 20,000 patients with heart failure, but not all those 20,000 patients with heart failure really required home visits and pharmacy visits from pharmacists, telemedicine, remote monitoring. And so how do you assign those resources to a particular group of patients within the general population of patients with heart failure? And here is where machine learning, predictive analytics that include all sorts of data, including social determinant of health, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, really were helpful in identifying the correct patients who benefit from a special intervention. A patient who lives alone, who has no transportation, who has no money to pay the electric and therefore has no money to pay for the copay for the cardiologist, will certainly be a patient who will benefit from a special intervention that helps the global care of that patient, including addressing social issues.
Yeah, so your experience is quite positive beginning in 2012 when you first started to apply machine learning and data analytics principles to healthcare quality on a populational level.
Yes.
But in general, what would you estimate the current trajectory to be in terms of the health providers who work at various other plans, not necessarily at those large ones where you worked or others, in terms of how are they dealing with the heaps of data, the unprecedented growth of data, right, which they have to use in order to make that experience personalized, to better identify and analyze their patients?
Well, the good news is that I would say the majority of health plans as well as health systems are now using Enpharma, are now using data and evidence post-launch of a new drug or to verify the applicability of certain treatment to specific subgroup of the populations. And so there is no question that the approach that includes the statistics on steroids, like I call it, right? In other words, machine learning takes advantage of the general principle statistics, but also takes advantage of the computational ability of our of the current machine learning tools to ingest data from multiple sources, yep. large number of data, and then look at trends in a very efficient way in order to come up with the best possible predictions or the best possible analysis, connecting all the dots. And this is important because think of platforms that include genetic testing, for example, that allow us to then include also the DNA, not only just the phenotype, the way the patient presents, and at the same time, the social determinant of health. So the way the patient is inserting in society and the ecosystem around that patient. All of that is now available to us through the machine learning capabilities that, again, ingest multiple data at the time from different sources, contrary to statistics, the traditional statistics of the 70s or the 60s, where essentially you would need to analyze one class, one element at a time, or maybe in multi-regression analysis, only few elements at the same time.
Okay. Now, are there particular disease states or specific examples that you can share in which predictive machine learning models are improving the quality of healthcare? Is it in screening, for example, that's more accessible to all patients? That can be maybe a step before considering gene therapy treatments.
Yeah, so I mean, we are just in just in the process of publishing a paper on the use of machine learning to identify patients with hepatitis C earlier than what the current care delivery systems allow us. Patients with hepatitis C today have the opportunity to be cured with all the treatment, specific treatment that we have. However, the problem is that many of the patients with hepatitis C presents to a diagnosis relatively late in their disease process, and therefore not necessarily always able to be cured if they have irreversible cirrhosis, for example. Mm-hmm. Of the liver. So we looked at our own data, we looked at electronic medical records, we looked at a national view of the patient journey of patients with hepatitis C, and we also used the social determinant of health in our predictive models, and we came up with a algorithm which we are going to, through publication, suggest be utilized in order to identify these patients early. So this is one example. Other examples is to work that my team and I have been doing with the NIH for a while now in the area of rare diseases, where we are identifying the early presentations of certain diseases. We published about 14 of those. Instead of relying on claims and ICD-10s only, we are trying to identify those clinical manifestations, those sentinel manifestations that may allow us to reduce the time to diagnosis of rare diseases, or most rare diseases, from the current 4 or 5 years to as early as 1 month, right, or 2 months. Certainly, we do have genetic testing nowadays, but unfortunately, genetic testing and even natal screening not always identify the patients that we want to identify on time, because, again, we have a fractional care delivery system that may not allow, for example, the patients who are born and then sent home within 24 hours to be tested, or if they are tested, there is no follow-up. So many of these patients with rare disease, think about, we're about 25 million patients with rare disease in this country, 25 million spread across 7,000 diseases. So each of them have only few patients. So the expertise is not there across all the medical staff is only limited, of course, to high quality specialists working at centers of excellence. The key is to identify those patients early and refer those patients to specialists. And again, you don't need to be an expert in a specific rare disease, but you need to understand that the patient may have a rare disease and refer early. And so we are working on those, identify those sentinel effect, those sentinel clinical manifestation that should trigger the suspicion that the patient needs the next step in the diagnostic path and early referral. Other colleagues across the country and across the world, I should say, have identified ways to predict sepsis before actually sepsis manifests. It's very important because, particularly in a frail patient, if you have sepsis and is unrecognized within 48 hours, you may actually have a patient who is spiraling down towards death. On the other hand, if you miss the diagnosis, you're blasting the patient with antibiotics that the patient doesn't need. So colleagues at Duke, colleagues at the University of Pennsylvania have, and others, even at the University of Missouri, they have devised predictive models that identify these patients early with a very high positive predictive value. There has been a recent publication on how to predict patients who are going to develop pancreatic cancer. Again, you cannot prevent pancreatic cancer, but if you can get it early, you may be able to not necessarily cure, but certainly treat those patients. These are just some examples.
Okay, great. So you can essentially use predictive machine learning models to shorten the time to diagnosis. Are there particular differences in access to genetic testing in the United States where the care is fragmented compared to other countries in Europe?
Well, there are some countries in Europe where it's probably easier to offer neonatal testing. Mm-hmm. And there is a more coordinated care delivery system through the National Service. The advantage of the National Service is, again, it is more of a focus on preventive care and coordinated care rather than acute care. And so you find that, of course, our delivery system is exceptionally good at acute care, but less optimal is the delivery system for preventive care and coordinated care.
Now, some of the advances in machine learning, how can they help researchers maybe identify even genetic mutation or at the RNA level, right?
Right.
Before in your lecture.
Yeah. This is an excellent question because if one thinks of the Moderna story, right, and the mRNA, the team of Moderna for a long time focused on the machine learning and AI. And what did they do? What they were thinking was, if we can create to make it simple for everybody to understand, a library of RNA transcriptions, at one point we are going to be able to match what we have in the library, in our storage, with the transcription of a new enzyme or new virus, right? And so the artificial intelligence tools that they devised was able to create all sorts of new transcriptions, right, automatically. Mm-hmm. When the first information came from China on the COVID-19, genetic transcription, they were able to match it quickly with what they had in storage, and very quickly they were able to then create a vaccine. So right now I'm very optimistic, actually, that the mRNA technology will allow us to identify the appropriate transcriptions for the for some of the patients with rare diseases who have mostly have a one gene mutation, right? So just for everybody to understand, what the mRNA does is that technology essentially tells the body to build up your own protein. You're building whatever you are missing. And so many patients with rare diseases are missing a certain enzyme, a certain protein.
I see.
And so instead of putting it in, right, from outside.
The gene therapy, which can be expensive.
Well, also the gene therapy, which tells the gene, hey, you know, I'll give you a new gene and you build it. Uh-huh. Essentially, you are instructing your cells, your nucleus, to build, and your cells to build a new protein with a new mRNA transcription. So I think that from what I remember, there are already four or five opportunities that a couple of companies, including Moderna, are pursuing. In rare diseases, and this would be an addition to the current tools that we have, which is to build molecules and also genetic therapy.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you about what your current focus is at Eversana.
Yeah. So Eversana is a it is a 7,000 employees company. It is an international company. It's a life science organization that offers end-to-end commercialization for pharma, for device companies, and also for digital therapeutics. So a therapy that is based on digital medicine. Think of a pharma company with essentially without a molecule, without a pill, that has all the various departments that a pharma company would have. I am the corporate chief medical officer, meaning that I support all the units. And in a nutshell, my role is to translate clinical knowledge, administrative health administration knowledge, compliance, and health economics knowledge into actionable analytics. Mm-hmm. And so I work with business units. I work with the data science team to make sure that everything that I know from clinical, physiology, pathology, health economics, health administrations is translated in an analysis that is not just a dump of data, but provides insights that anybody can use. We also work with, as I mentioned, with the NIH on the study of rare diseases, and we are working with health systems, with some health systems, in exchanging ideas on how to support best post-launch drugs, the evidence that is necessary for the established value and the efficacy in clinical practice of some of the new therapies.
I want to switch gears a little bit to the real-world access to care for patients. You talked about launches. Eversana helps many pharmaceutical organizations with post-marketing. But ultimately, it's not just the attributes of the products, but it's how they move through the healthcare systems, which is what you've studied systematically. What patient sees which provider? Is it a primary care? Is it a cardiologist, do they have access to that? The social determinants of health that you spoke about, the co-pays and all of these complex, factors. And so what types of data really are required to identify and target patients so that they have that access to treatments or clinical trials?
So the FDA considers real world data, the electronic medical records, the clinical registries, claims, right? And of course, now any data that comes, that is derived from remote patient monitoring digital therapeutics. Mm-hmm. Ideally, for a complex project, we like to have access to anything that may contribute to the best possible view and the best possible angle for that analysis. In most cases, we start with claims. In-house at the Versana, we have claims databases for more than 290 million lives. And in one database, we also have medical cost. So that we can establish the medical cost of high quality value care and low quality, low value care, because unfortunately there is a lot of low value care that still is offered to patients. Electronic medical records allow us to identify the correct phenotypes. Do we have the right patients with the right combination of heart failure, diabetes, COPD, obesity, whatever? Or do we have the right patients with mucopolysaccharidosis type 2, which of course is a rare disease? And once we have the correct phenotypes, what we do, we extract all the important clinical factors that makes that patient indeed belonging to that particular label and diagnosis, and then build the same phenotype using claims. And the reason why we do that, we do that transfer knowledge, we do that because we want to make sure that we have a longitudinal view of the patient journey, right? The laboratory and genetic testing also help us to focus specifically on patients who have a certain, require certain target therapy. So those are all data that we believe may contribute to the best possible view of the patient journey. But I also am a strong advocate of social determinant of health, because there is plenty of evidence that the clinical outcomes really depend about 40-50% from the what the doctors prescribed, and the rest is the patient choices or the patient ecosystem. Patient choices, if the patient does not have barriers to care and chooses a certain lifestyle, think of alcoholism or smoking and so on, and or the ecosystem, think of patients who don't have access to care because belong to a certain underserved population, living in a certain underserved location in our cities or in rural areas. So in my experience, the particularly working at the health plans have shown clearly that the social determinant of health have a strong value in any predictive model.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned electronic medical records, and I do have to ask you this question about patients and their rights to their own health data. You know, as they move from one healthcare system to the other, from one provider to the next, how can they make sure that they continue to receive that high quality of care? Or is it possible for them to have rights to that data?
Well, legally, the data belongs to the patient. There's no question about that. However, it is true that is becoming that although it's becoming a little easier to obtain your data, think of patient portal, right? Yeah. That many health systems have. It may be a little complicated to navigate the obtaining the entire chart, for example.
Right.
I think the key here is interoperability. So because part of the problem is that we have multiple electronic medical records that don't speak to each other. People are experimenting with all sorts of things, from patient portal to blockchain, where you decide to enter only the data that you want, so that then you can access with a password anywhere in the world. So there is no sort of experiment. But there is no question that the technology now exists to make the electronic medical record interoperable. The problem is that it's difficult to implement. However, if there is any patient that is listening to this podcast, I would say remember, the data is yours. The information is yours, and you have the right to see your lab, your records, and that is important to so that you can discuss also with your physician.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and they're becoming more educated, so I think your advice is for them to be more proactive, right, and ask questions, right, from their physicians. Even if they can't interpret that X-ray, make sure to be proactive and get the access to it, and make it see, you know, have it seen by the right provider.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that my advice also is to have a balanced attitude towards the information that is gathered on internet or from the neighbor, right? Because there is no question that patients come to the office all the time now with information that they gathered from television, commercials, from interviews of family and friends and neighbors, and from the TikTok or whatever.
Yeah.
And although it is important to have some knowledge of what of the possible conditions associated with your own disease, as well as the potential treatment, still you need to identify a physician you trust. Mm-hmm. And discuss openly with that physician everything that you know and everything that the physician knows, and then making that choice for your treatment together.
Well, Pier Antonio, thank you very much for taking us through a lot of the highlights of the methodology that's making important waves in creating promise in medicine globally.
How do you
hope that your education, your enthusiasm for the power of computation, improving quality of care, how can it improve the explainability and the understanding, the awareness among patients and providers of the methodology that's used, of machine learning and its various applications?
Yeah, and this is another excellent question, because obviously one of the characteristics of a high quality methodology is that we must be able to explain
right.
it, and must be ethical, of course, but also must be able to explain it. I think that we're getting better and better because I think that more physicians who may not have the technical ability to design the actual technical computation, right? But understand the general concept, get right. involved. And so essentially still the physician is in control of the final deliverable. And mm-hmm. so the physician must understand the not only the problem, must actually design the analysis with the technical people, with the data scientists, in order to answer specific questions, which are clinical questions, research questions, business research questions, right? And then interpret the final deliverable. And so the more physicians are getting involved, and there is no question that they are, particularly younger physicians who are used to computation and coding and so on. Right. And if they are using the final actionable analysis in the context of taking care of patients, then there is a hope that we are able to explain to not only the individual patient, but also society in general, what all of this means.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Pier Antonio.
Thank you.
This will pave the way to more conversations and more in-depth conversations, answers to questions from our audience in the future as well. And I hope to talk to you again very soon.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Likewise.